This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Seriously injured. The vigil will take place on the sidewalk in front of the Macaroni Grill on Sunnyside Road.
Multnomah County Sheriff Dan Staton plans to stop honoring requests by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, to hold undocumented immigrants brought to county jail for low-level nonviolent offenses. The controversial practice of such ICE holds under the Secure Communities Program of 2008 sees jails running fingerprints against a national ICE database and then detaining immigrants for possible deportation regardless of the severity of their crimes. Now, according to a recent report in the Willamette Week, Staton has drafted a resolution to release undocumented immigrants held in his jails for nonviolent misdemeanors. He's indicated that he will only hold inmates who are suspected to be undocumented, who've been charged with felonies or Class A violent misdemeanors. On April 4th, his proposal will go to a vote before Multnomah County Commissioners, who the Willamette Week credited, along with local immigrant rights groups, for putting pressure on Staton to change his policy. Today, I spoke with David Fidanke, the executive director of the ACLU of Oregon, for ACLU's reaction to Staton's policy shift. What has Sheriff Dan Staton's stance on ICE holds been up until this point?
Well, the sheriff and Multnomah County have taken the position in our lawsuit challenging the practice that they are required to honor ICE detainers. And so the news that's broken this week is the first indication that the sheriff has recognized that he has a choice about honoring most ICE detainers. There's a very small percentage that may be mandatory, we believe, under federal law. And the whole point of our lawsuit on behalf of Miguel Cabrera Cruz is that Oregon law prohibits sheriffs and other state and local police from honoring detainers that are merely requests from immigration agents that do not have the status of a warrant for an arrest or hold that might come from other jurisdictions.
What's the current status of that lawsuit?
Our attorneys are working with county council to clarify the legal issues so that we hope the case can go to a judge based on what are known as summary judgment motions, where the facts are not in dispute, only law will be in dispute. Last I heard, those discussions were continuing, and I don't think a court date has been set yet. The news this week is certainly a step in the right direction, but we think that Oregon law requires the sheriff to go quite a bit further. And we're looking forward to getting a judicial ruling that would make it safe for all residents of Multnomah County to be in contact with the police when they're victims of crime or witnesses to crime, or for that matter, stopped on minor traffic infractions so that they aren't subject to being picked up and possibly separated from their families. This policy of Sheriff Staton and other sheriffs around the state has caused tremendous upheaval and damage in our communities and made our communities less safe.
Beyond the implications regarding the relations between law enforcement and Oregon's immigrant communities, do you know what effect ICE holds and a policy of ICE detentions have had on the state criminal justice system in terms of resources?
You know, I think that that varies county by county. In Multnomah County, our understanding is that cells at the jail, you know, had a number of people who were being held on ICE detainers even after they were ordered released by local judges, and that as a result of the sheriff's policy, other more serious offenders have had to be released. And that's almost certainly the case in other counties. So the fact that Oregon sheriffs continue to honor these voluntary requests from immigration agents, we believe is not only illegal under Oregon law, but unconscionable given the pressures on local jails.
How do Staten's actions fall in the context of the actions of other jurisdictions, either statewide or nationally, that you guys know of?
There's an increasing number of counties where either those in charge of the local jails or elected officials have decided to stop honoring ICE detainer requests from agents unless there is a judicial warrant that's been issued for an immigration crime or some other criminal offense. Some of the larger cities involved are, you know, Chicago, Cook County, and there is ongoing lawsuit in Los Angeles, and officials down there have modified their policies partly in reaction to that, but that lawsuit continues. So ACLU is pushing this issue nationwide in every locality where we think there is a good case to be made.
I've been speaking with David Fidanke, the executive director of ACLU Oregon. For KBOO News, I'm Jen Chavez.
You know, KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. And now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Robin and Karen to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Jen, for covering the news tonight. Welcome to the 2013 Spring Membership Drive at KBOO Radio. I'm asking you to give us a call, pull over on your way home, pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. If you're sitting in a cafe and you're online, visit the website at kboo.fm or stop and see us. 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, just south of Burnside.
Yes, and our KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game. They are doing double time, and we would like you to do the same. Call right now, 877-500-5266. We want you to contribute. We want you to become a member and join the community of KBOO. Our public affairs shows address a very broad range of topics, from environment to human rights, labor, feminism, health, social activism, and much, much more. And we keep you informed about local activist groups and their activities before, during, and after their actions. And just some of the stories KBOO's evening news program has reported on just since the membership drive has begun on March 21st. Audio from the Portland City Council accepting the annual FBI Portland Police Bureau Joint Terrorism Task Force report, the Sierra Club opposing the fluoridation of Portland water, and an interview with the immigrant rights group CASA on the state Senate passing the Oregon Dream Act. These are just some of the news items that we have brought to you just since the drive has started. So we would like you to join now. Join the KBOO community, 877-500-5266, or go to the website at kboo.fm. And we have some thank you gifts waiting for you. We have our telephone volunteers standing by. We have Keller, Tom, and Aaron patiently waiting for you to call, waiting for those phones to ring, wanting to hear from you, wanting to hear why you love KBOO. Tell us why you enjoy listening to Democracy Now!, why you enjoy listening to our evening news. And Jen and Robert are here. We have volunteers every evening bringing you the important issues of the day. So call now, 877-500-5266.
Oregon's retired teachers, postal workers, and bus drivers may soon be making do with just a little bit less. Today, a proposed bill to reduce public pension benefits for Oregon government workers passed Oregon Senate Rules and Rules Committee. KBOO's Aaron J. Bernard has the story.
Despite vocal opposition, the committee voted to pass Senate Bill 822. The bill would reduce the annual cost of living increase that most retired public employees receive under the Public Employees Retirement System, or PERS. Under the Democrat-sponsored bill, annual PERS benefits increases would be based on income. Retirees earning more than $60,000 will be hit the hardest, with annual benefits increasing by much less than 1%. Pensioners earning less than $20,000 would likely see continued increases of approximately 2%. The plan would also eliminate increases in retirement benefits for retirees living out of state. Oregon's pension fund lost $17 billion in 2008, almost 30% of its value. The bill was proposed as part of a package that would carve out $6.75 billion in funding for Oregon schools in the 2013 to 2015 biennium. The cuts would save Oregon more than $800 million, according to preliminary numbers. The committee's yes vote came on the heels of spirited testimony from dozens of government workers, advocates, and retirees who attended committee hearings Wednesday. In public testimonials, attendees said they were appalled at the proposal and that the reduction represented a broken promise on the part of the government. Some suggested that the government raise taxes on the wealthy and sue big banks to make up for the budgetary shortfall. School advocates and Republican committee members protested that the bill didn't go far enough to cover gaps in education funding and asked for a larger benefit reduction. Senate Bill 822 now moves on to the Joint Budget Committee. Reporting with KBOO News, this is Aaron J. Bernard.
1,700 Oregon homeowners will see a permanent extension of their property tax payment deferrals. Yesterday, the Oregon Senate passed House Bill 2489 with a vote of 29-0 and no amendment. The bill will grandfather 1,700 participants previously disqualified from a state program for having reverse mortgages. The 50-year-old program was restored in 2011 to meet an increased request for aid amongst low-income homeowners who are 62 and older or have disabilities and has 7,500 current participants. The program pays the property taxes for participants and recoups the payment with interest after the homes are sold or if the homeowner dies. Reverse mortgages do not ensure that the state will recoup its deferral payments. House Bill 2489 is waiting to be signed into law by Governor Kitzhaber.
Paley Warnock addressed the Portland City Council yesterday to speak about the necessity and value of the TriMet Youth Bus Pass. The program, which makes transportation more affordable for Portland area students, has been at risk of being cut from the city's budget several times since its creation 4 years ago. KBOO's Robin Ryan asked Warnock about her testimony.
Can you tell me what compelled you to testify?
The youth bus pass I am very reliant on, and I know many students who are. The student union agreed that we wanted to get some people who had good stories behind the use of the TriMet passes and who really were reliant on it, and being one of those people, I was compelled to testify. I also feel very comfortable speaking in public and that kind of thing. So.
And how long is your commute?
I just moved, but before that I had to take 3 buses every day, like in the morning, just to get to school. It took 3 buses, and then that was like closer to 4 miles away, and then 3 to 4 on the way back home.
How long have you been using this resource?
All of my high school career. It's been around for my whole 4 years. I think, though, my freshman year was possibly the first year that we got it. Ever since it's come into existence, though, then it's been constantly threatened by the budget. We have to fight for it every single year to keep it.
What does it make available to you?
It makes being able to say I can get to a job at a time, at a reliable time, makes that possible. Like work and school and, I mean, other really pertinent things. Like today, I have to go to the Social Security office and, like, that kind of thing. It's a huge necessity for me to be able to get around Portland.
And in the absence of this resource, how's it going to impact your life?
I don't even know like how I would make it around Portland right now. My bike is out of commission, and I just had to sell my other one, and it's hard to find, you know, good bikes that are not insanely expensive. But like being an artist as well, I carry around a lot of artwork and stuff when I'm going places or need to get to school or need to go to a show or something, and I can't really bike with huge art pieces, so that will very much get in my way. It would cost also a ton of money because, like, each pass, just for like a 2-hour pass, that would be, well, it depends if I get to pay the student thing, you know, if it's like $150 to $250, or if I get a month-long pass that's in like the $70 range, and like I don't have that money just to throw down $70 for a pass. Or more, I'm not quite sure. Prices probably have gone up. I'm an independent student. I don't have any parents like in my life, and I haven't for a while.
Are you familiar with the overall budgeting process, and do you see other areas within the budget that changes could be made in order to preserve the bus pass?
I definitely think there are. There are many places that money can be drawn from, and we just saw that some of the administrators of TriMet just got a raise. So we're so it's like you're getting raises and yet you can't afford to give some students bus passes? I don't think so. And those kinds of things that really make us, you know, testify and want to get out there is because it's not even like there really is no place for this money to come from. There are plenty of places, and they're just using that to provide it.
Is there a way you could guesstimate how many kids you know whose lives would be impacted by the lack of availability of this bus pass resource?
Every Portland Public School student would be affected. Everybody rides the bus. Even if you have a car at some point, like you can drive or something, but I mean, it costs a lot of money to park downtown, and not everybody has cars all the time, or it costs lots of gas, and everyone at my school does. I mean, there's roughly 46,000 CPS students. If we're your future and we keep getting crushed, then it's just going to have a crushed future.
For folks hearing what we're talking about and wanting to get involved, where can they go?
The Portland Student Union, which, I mean, it's been getting some publicity, so I don't know if you've heard about us, but we're trying to develop ourselves into a larger union, and we're going to become an actual student. We're actually becoming a union, just like the teacher union. And so they'll come to us, and we want to encourage more open communication between the public and parents and just adults, as well as other students and other schools, not secrecy in general. I mean, that was it was a really interesting council meeting the other day because we were a huge topic in general.
And is there a website for your student union?
Yeah, there is. PortlandStudentUnion.wordpress.com.
Portland Student Union at WordPress.com?
Yeah.
This is Robin Ryan for KBOO News.
You're listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. Now it's your turn. Joining us now are Karen and Robin to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
And thank you, Robert. And yes, we are back here at our spring membership drive. I'm Karen. I'm here with Robin. And we want to ask you to step up your game. The volunteers are here. Robert and Jen are here bringing you the PM news here at KBOO, and it's a one-hour special news during our membership drive, and they have doubled their efforts. We want to ask you to please double your efforts to 877-500-5266. We want to also thank some of the people who have donated food to us during this hour to keep our volunteers here replenished and happy. Marseille Bakery at 1625 Southeast Bybee, Sivalaya Thai, 4806 Southeast Stark Street, and Vita Cafe, 3024 Northeast Alberta Street. Thank you so much for our wonderful food donations. And again, we would like you to call KBOO right now, 877-500-5266, or go to the website, kboo.fm. We have thank you gifts waiting for you for a $90, $60, or $100 pledge. We have wonderful thank you gifts for you. We have our volunteers standing by waiting for your phone calls. But first, I'm going to pass it over to Robin first. Robin, tell us why you became a volunteer here at KBOO.
I am, by coincidence, a member of the squad at KBOO's News Pod. I've learned a lot about the organizations in town that advocate for the well-being of the commons. There's a lot of opportunity to be had here. There's training. I've learned about interviewing. I've learned about how to create, edit, and manipulate audio so that it fits into certain time that I can match the sound of the person that I'm interviewing. When I first arrived, there were these great big audio boards. They were very intimidating, and the more time I spend, the more comfortable I get. So come feel what it's like to take advantage of such opportunities. I tell my kids, ain't nothing worthwhile or free or easy. And this is not free. It is easy to learn, but it is not free. Bringing you quality audio costs. So I'd like you to step up and contribute by calling 877-500-5266 or visit us at the website, kboo.fm. You can also stop and check out all these great pieces of equipment that I'm talking about. They're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, just south of Burnside.
And yes, again, Jen and Robert have stepped up their game. They are bringing you timely, controversial, progressive news, the truth and facts, news you can use. It's not skewed views that is brought to you by the U.S. corporate-sponsored media. And, you know, how often have you found yourself unconsciously turning on KBOO after you've heard a soundbite or a snippet of news on the U.S. corporate media, TV or radio station? And you rely on KBOO. You rely on KBOO to hear the rest of the story because you know you are going to hear an in-depth report, the truth, the facts. And it helps you become a more informed person. And what happens when we become fully informed citizens? Well, we can participate more directly in the civic discussion. We can question authority. And, you know, we can make choices from a place of not from fear, but from a place of understanding and facts and truth. And so we want you to call. We want you to call right now, 877-500-5266. We know you rely on KBOO. You rely on our volunteers stepping up, bringing you the news 5 days a week. And call now, 877-500-5266. Go to the KBOO website. Click on the $ KBOO.FM. KBOO does not play the ratings games. KBOO does not seek advertising dollars. It's not about the profits. KBOO is beholden to no one but you, our listeners. Join the KBOO community, 877-500-5266. Again, if you're online listening right now, anywhere in Oregon, anywhere around the world, kboo.fm. We'd love to hear from you. Our volunteers are standing by waiting to receive your call. Tell us why you enjoy KBOO. Tell us why you enjoy the news that you can use, news that makes a difference in your life here, our local, national, and international news that we bring to you 5 days a week. And give us a call, 877-500-5266, kboo.fm.
The price tag of the U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan will total between $4 and $6 trillion, making them the most expensive U.S. wars to date. That's according to new research from Harvard University. Most of that bill remains outstanding to creditors. According to the report's author, the legacy of decisions taken during the Iraq and Afghanistan wars will, quote, dominate future federal budgets for decades to come.
Former Lieutenant Dan Choi, a well-known gay rights advocate and West Point graduate, was fined today for taking part in a White House protest. Choi and 12 other activists were arrested for handcuffing themselves to the White House fence in November of 2010 to call attention to the military's "don't ask, don't tell" policy. The U.S. government dismissed the charges against the other activists in exchange for a guilty plea. Lieutenant Choi refused that deal on free speech grounds and now argues that since Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been repealed, the charges should be dropped. Choi, who was discharged from the military for coming out while the anti-gay policy was still in place, faced up to 6 months in jail or a $5,000 fine. Earlier today, he was found guilty of failure to obey a lawful order and fined $100. In an interview with Huffington Post, Choi said he believed the government used the charges against him as a way to prevent his reenlistment.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KABU Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Tillicum Wawa at 6, featuring discussion of Native American efforts to stop the Keystone XL pipeline. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly sunny with a slight chance of afternoon showers and a high near 67 degrees.
It's 5:30 and time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
It's one thing for big oil frackers to bust into our earth, our communities, and our economic well-being. But the fracking fad is also busting the free speech rights of locals who dare to speak out against it. Welcome to Sanford, New York, a pleasant place of 2,800 citizens on the New York-Pennsylvania border. Unfortunately, the pleasantness has been interrupted by a major squabble over whether corporate drillers should be allowed to extract natural gas by fracturing the huge Marcellus Shale formation that underlies the region. Hydraulic fracturing is rampant on the Pennsylvania side, but New York imposed a moratorium on the inherently dangerous process in order to assess the health and safety issues involved. However, as On Earth magazine reports, Sanford's town board is eager to allow oil and gas outfits to frack away. The board even leased land to one corporation that wants to drill inside the town. But last fall, Sanford officials went further, imperiously imposing a gag order on their own citizens. It seems that opponents of the profiteering rush were using the board's public comment session to, well, to comment publicly. Irritated, the board decreed that any topic could be discussed at its meetings except fracking. They rationalized this autocratic restriction on people's democratic rights by saying that the ongoing discussion on whether to frack or not got in the way of other board business. But gosh, that's the way it is in a democracy. The people themselves can dare to set the agenda by insisting on discussing the big issues that matter most to their families and communities. This is Jim Hightower saying the gag townspeople have now sued the Sanford board for fracking their free speech rights and making a mockery of democracy. For more information, contact Catskill Citizens for Safe Energy at catskillcitizens.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
In Chicago, students, teachers, and parents are protesting the city's effort to close dozens of schools. Thousands of demonstrators marched through the streets Wednesday, and more than 100 were detained in an act of civil disobedience. The city claims the schools are underutilized and underperforming and says it will help the school system bridge a $1 billion budget deficit. But opponents vow to fight the planned closings and demand more of a say in school reform. Jasal Noor from Free Speech Radio News brings us this report.
In one of the largest demonstrations since last fall's historic strike, the Chicago Teachers Union rallied educators, students, and parents in downtown's Daley Plaza. 14-year-old Isis Hernandez says she took part because closing schools will put her fellow students in danger by forcing them to cross gang lines in a city already facing an epidemic of gun violence.
There's a lot of places in Chicago that already have violence, and this is just going to increase more violence in there, and we already have kids dying.
In front of Chicago Public School headquarters, dozens of people sat down and locked arms, including John Thomas, a professor at the Chicago Theological Seminary, Keith Bloom, a public school teacher, and Amelia Fortunato, an organizer with Unite Here.
We're sitting in the streets. It's a historic way for people in this country to express their views and to make a strong statement that we're not going to let these decisions of closed schools stand. We hope to ignite a strong public uprising in Chicago to say no to these school closings.
And I'm here today because we need to invest in our schools for better neighborhoods. And this will not make our neighborhoods safer or better. And Mayor Emanuel needs to hear that message.
I'm out here because I don't want to see the schools get shut down. I think this is a racist attack on our schools and on honestly on black jobs in Chicago. The public sector is where black workers work, and our cafeteria workers are not going to let that happen, so that's why we're out here today.
Officials with Chicago Public Schools say the closings are necessary to help bridge a $1 billion budget deficit. But critics, like SEIU Local 1 President Tom Balanoff, say the shortfalls can be made up by reinvesting money from the city's Tax Increment Financing, or TIF, program.
There's a $1 billion deficit with the city schools. Well, $1 billion have been taken out of property taxes for TIFs. It's time to reinvest in our schools and our communities. That's what's going to make Chicago strong.
When Chicago Public Schools CEO Barbara Bird Bennett announced the proposed closures last Thursday, she argued it would help guarantee equal access to school resources for every student.
What we must do is to ensure that the resources that some kids get, that all kids get. And those resources include libraries and access to technology and science labs and art classrooms. Every child in Chicago does not get that now. With our consolidations, we're able to guarantee that our children will get what they need and what they deserve.
But critics disagree, saying the school closures will disproportionately affect African American students in already disinvested neighborhoods on Chicago's South and West Side. Civil rights leader Reverend Jesse Jackson, who took part in the demonstration, say the closures don't address the core problem, that historically, schools serving low-income students of color are underfunded.